Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire, all safely back from Spain now, so no Chris Packham-style outside sound effects, Kieran.
Absolutely. Yes, I've got to say, I had a wonderful time there. The Rangers fans I met were all fantastic. I've got to say, big boo to UEFA, the way that the fans were treated and herded at the stadium. I was talking to some of the lads on Thursday after the match and heard a few horror stories. So, you know, as well as having to go and pay top dollar to go and watch the match, people weren't giving access to water. They were, you know, they were kept in for too long, and it was ridiculously hot. So you know, and from UEFA it was sort of, well, you know, we were busy. Yeah, you know, it's a final. If you're going to charge a premium price for a product, then treat people with a bit more decency.
Well, yeah, we'll be coming on to treating fans with decency later on, Kieran, I suspect, as it happens. But it was a fantastic game. Rangers played, I think, better than anybody expected. But I suspect UEFA, probably men of a certain age, you thought, oh, these two clubs in the 70s had a reputation for trouble, so we better keep them apart. It looked hot from where I was watching it. You know I don't like the heat, Kieran. I'm afraid, Kieran, we can't move on without mentioning that somebody got told off after the last pod, didn't they, in Spain?
Yes. Yes, it was too much birdsong.
Yeah, producer guy really is quite picky at times, isn't he? But thank you as well to those people who, as I predicted, tweeted in. And I think if you're going to do anything about birdsong, you should tweet. tweeted in to tell me they weren't sparrows. They aren't any sparrows, apparently, in Andalusia. But my response is I'm from South London, so every bird's a sparrow as far as I'm concerned. It's questions day, Kieran, but we have two big news story, one domestic and one foreign, for want of a better word. And the first one, Leeds and Burnley are threatening legal action over Everton's finances. So we are recording this on Sunday morning. We don't know which of Leeds and Burnley are staying up. Our more cynical listeners may suggest that whichever one does stay up may take the legal action less seriously. But at the moment, this is a big issue, Kieran, isn't it?
It is. And first of all, I would say, if you want to get the real detail in terms of the numbers, our very good friend Swiss Ramble has put up an absolutely fantastic thread on this. What's happened is Everton have published losses of £372 million over the course of the last 3 years. Now, the Premier League has said that you can tweak those and you take the average of the last 2 years into account. So from a profitability and sustainability point of view, it looks like we're kicking off with a figure of £255 million, but you're only allowed to lose £105 over the requisite period. And then Everton have said, oh, well, yeah, but by the time you take into consideration COVID, we are within the allowed limit of £105 million. So you know, that's a pretty big discount. And they've also said, and they've got this up on their website, that COVID cost the club £170 million. And you go, well, that's a lot. I mean, okay, let's think about how COVID would have impacted upon a football club. First of all, you've got lower revenues. Well, Everton normally make around about £14 to £15 million a year from ticket sales. So you do that over a quarter and a season and a quarter, you're talking perhaps £20 million of revenue. They've got the bit of the TV rebate. Yes, you've got some additional costs through social distancing, through health tests taking place, having to get them COVID tested on a regular basis, but that doesn't come to 170. And then we've seen a lot of other clubs, you know, Villa, West Ham, Brighton, Leicester, Newcastle, Arsenal, you know, lots of other clubs have come out and they have put in varying amounts of detail the costs of COVID. But in the main, they've been in the ballpark of, say, £40 to £55 million.
Yeah.
And then Everton say 170. And you're going, well, hold on. Yeah, as far as I'm aware, there wasn't there wasn't an L4 variant which impacted upon Everton to a greater extent than other football clubs. And they said, oh, well, yeah, but the transfer market was depressed and we've been hit hard by that. And you think, well, yeah, Everton have signed a load of players, but yeah, I'm not being rude. They've signed a load of crap players for big fees. And to go and to say that they've not been able to sell them due to COVID, I think is harsh. You know, the reason why Cech Tosin has not been sold for £40 million is nothing to do with COVID. It's to do with, you know, perhaps they've not made great decisions in terms of recruitment. So Leeds and Burnley will have taken legal advice. And I have good understanding that had Watford or Norwich, for example, been in that, you know, that third relegation spot, I suspect that they might have been doing very similar. So do we have any precedent for this in terms of what is perceived by the aggrieved party? Yeah, we're not lawyers.
Yeah.
But it's perceived by the aggrieved party to have suffered loss following relegation or loss of promotion due to some form of misdemeanor. Well, if we go back to the legendary Carlos Tevez case in West Ham, they ended up giving Sheffield United around about £20 million in compensation. Now, that was sort of mid-2000s. So, you know, since then, the numbers have increased substantially. We could be talking large sums of money here. Remember, we've also got the dispute between Middlesbrough and Derby, which has been settled now by the two owners. And it looks as if Derby, or rather Mel Morris, is going to give some form of financial compensation. And there's an outstanding claim from Wycombe Wanderers with regards to getting relegated last season the way that Derby County had presented their accounts. So there is history. There is precedent for this. We await developments. Everton, are not going to get relegated. We know that for certain. And therefore, it's going to be one of Leeds or Burnley. They will have taken legal advice. Everton are saying, well, the £170 million COVID loss is what we've been advised by our auditors. So what's going to happen? Well, the lawyers are going to get rich.
And what's your instinct as to how it will play out, Kieran?
I think we will perhaps have the Premier League pressurised to do something or say something, and at present they're being very silent. And this is where I think the Premier League doesn't help itself. I think it should be more open in terms of where we stand with regards to this. Everton will push back because that's what they will be advised to do. And I suspect we could have some form of out-of-court settlement if the figures are investigated with the forensic detail.
Do you know what, Kieran? I wasn't going to say this because I don't want to be the one told off by producer guy, because he keeps telling us this is a football pod, a football finance pod, not a football pod, and that we should be impartial. But the way I feel about Everton at the moment, I'm on the side of Leeds and Burnley, to be perfectly honest, because I've got friends who are Everton fans. People who listen to this pod will know that we both admire Everton as a football club. But what happened on Thursday night and what was allowed to happen to Palace players was just despicable. And anybody who knows anything about football would have predicted that at some stage during that game, Everton fans would have been on the pitch. The atmosphere at half-time was just so hostile. It was febrile. The Everton Football Club, the Merseyside Police, the referee, Anthony Taylor, did nothing to ensure the safety of Palace players. Nothing. And after the first pitch invasion, Palace coaching staff specifically expressed their concerns to the ref, and he ignored them, just as he ignored it when Michael Olise was hit by a bottle in the third round of the FA Cup at Millwall. And I'm assuming, Kieran, that the silence from Palace, Everton, the FA and the Premier League indicates that there's an investigation going on. But if not, Palace fans won't let this go away. We're already discussing ways to make sure this isn't swept under the carpet. And yes, angry Everton fans will treat me and say it was just a small number of us. Yeah? And you know, it's emotional. And yes, there are some dickhead Palace fans out there. And I know that I've excused football fans in the past, because in the past we were treated like cattle. So it's no wonder we reacted, but we're not anymore. And low rent psychologists in tabloids going, well, this is pent up COVID anxiety, or this is just nonsense. These are dickheads being dickheads. And it's got to stop, Kieran. And I'm sure Swindon fans feel exactly the same way about Port Vale, and Sheffield United fans feel exactly the same way about Nottingham Forest. Something that was wrong what happened on Thursday night. It was predictable, it was preventable, and some of those images we've seen are just really upsetting. The young Palace players don't deserve to be treated like that. And we have another news story, Kieran, during which I will try and calm down. And that's Kylian Mbappe's change of mind about moving to Real Madrid could lead him to some trouble, couldn't it?
Well, it's the hissiest of hissy fits. First of all, it's going back to what's happened during the course of the week. If you win a football match, if you avoid relegation, I'm too busy celebrating. You know, this culture of goading and trying to provoke reactions from opponents is just how go and celebrate for Christ's sake. Yeah. And you know, let the players of the opposition off the pitch. They're professionals. The field of play is their place of work. You know, I don't clamber onto a stage after a gig and try to headbutt somebody because they didn't sing a song in tune.
Yeah,
so I find it bizarre. But this is part of, you say, it's dickhead's day out. There is now a belief of, well, what is accepted, anything goes, especially if you've got a camera in your hand.
Yeah,
because then you can go and you know, I saw what happened to Patrick Vieira. Somebody was trying to provoke a reaction so he could film it, show it to his mates on Instagram, and become a bit of a lad, a bit of a hero. And as far as I'm concerned, Patrick Vieira was perfectly entitled to react in the way that he did.
It wasn't just Vieira. It was Anderson. It was Zaha. It was Benteke. Eze was chased by a man wielding a flare, and there's not a security or a policeman in sight. And Eze's the nicest young 20-year-old kid you could imagine. Why does he have to be threatened like that with what at the moment appears to be no sanction whatever? But anyway, sorry, let's get back to the hissy fits. That sounds fun. I also like the idea of you clambering on stage at your age. some of the bands you see, Kieran, they would be really slow motion stage invasions. All of you hopped up on quavers and water. The Sisters of Mercy panicking as he'll come Zimmer framing down towards the stage.
On Saturday night, confirmation came through that Kylian Mbappe, a Parisian, a Frenchman, a French international football player, had decided to play football in Paris, in France. And this provoked a reaction of incredible fury. And La Liga, which is the Spanish administrative body for the competition, put out a full-page statement of absolutely righteous indignation, saying this is absolutely outrageous. How dare Paris Saint-Germain match the offer from Real Madrid? And I'm going, hold on. And this is this incredible sense of entitlement that you have within Spanish football, which is such a shame, because you know, I've just come from I've come from a week working in Spain. I've spent 2 days filming at Real Betis, and the people there are absolutely fantastic. And I went along to see them play last week, and it was one of those, you know, certain things. Sort of, God, I'm so proud to be a football fan. So you've got individual clubs who are absolutely magnificent. And then you've got Real Madrid and Barcelona and Tebas, who's head of La Liga, and they act with this incredible sense of entitlement. And if you go to Marca, take a look at the English version of Marca, which is the Spanish purely football newspaper. And yes, they've got to get, you know, 30, 40 pages out each day. And yes, it is mainly to do with Barcelona, Real Madrid. But every single article is the same. You know, how on earth could Kylian Mbappe have any self-respect having to play against the, you know, the likes of, you know, Lille or Lyon or these other clubs? I go, well, you mean that if he came to Madrid and he was playing against Osasuna or Getafe or some of these clubs, he would therefore automatically feel, oh yes, this is a much, much, much higher level. So yeah, it was an incredible reaction from the Spanish press, who are very much in the pockets of the big clubs.
Yeah.
And that was also something which was really depressing to see on Thursday following the Frankfurt Rangers match, because I think there's one incident where some Frankfurt fans who were wearing balaclavas decided to go for the Eurovision luzzing contest in respect of some chairs, and some Rangers fans joined in. But yeah, with 150,000 fans there, it wasn't right, but it was not representative of 150,000 fans. You know, all I saw was people singing and getting sunburnt, and that was about it. Mbappe, who is at the end of his contract next month, so therefore he's perfectly entitled to negotiate the best contract possible for his career, and he has done that. So he will have got a huge signing on fee, and I think this is one thing that we are seeing now increasingly, that at the elite level, players are quite happy to run down their contracts in the knowledge that if you're going to be in a position, yeah, especially with Mbappe, yeah, he's a fan, yeah, absolutely magnificent player. He's only 23, so he's got a huge number of years ahead in terms of his career. You run down the contract until it expires, and therefore the buying club, which can either be your existing club or a new club, has two choices. Yeah, they can A, sign you, or B, they can go out into the market and sign a top class striker who's going to cost, yeah, 100 million plus in the transfer market. And you say, well, you give me that 100 million pounds, I'll stay, or I'll go to you. Mm. So, and this is what we've seen in respect to him. His signing on fee is estimated to be somewhere in the region of 100 to 150 million. He's going to keep a significant proportion of his image rights, potentially 80 to 100%. And his salary is, and I quote, only 40 million a year.
How's he going to get by on that, Kieran?
Exactly. But my view, good luck to the lad. He's at the top of his profession.
Yeah, I mean, what this reflects, Kieran, in Spain is the realization that whereas 20 years ago there were probably only one, maybe two clubs in Europe that could match the finances of Madrid and Barcelona, there are now seven or eight. That's the problem. They now realize they're not top of the pecking order. But and before we move on, Kieran, luzzing. Is that an old Sussex word? What's luzzing?
That's what you do. That's what you do with chairs. You luzz them.
Are you luzz
that's
them,
the official luzz. Yeah, L-U-Z-Z.
Don't you dare.
Well, it's not ZZ Top, is it?
That's true. Well, no, it's not ZZ Top, but also they're not from South London, Kieran, as we are. So where we pronounce things properly. We pronounce Z, we might drop our H's, but we pronounce our Z's properly. And yes, Everton fans listening, I'm aware of the apparent hypocrisy that Kieran and I said it's only a few fans at the Frankfurt Rangers games, it's only a few of your fans, but still it's got to be sorted. So let's get into the questions, Kieran. We have some very good questions here. Now, first one comes from Dan Jackerman. Dan says, my question is on the back of a recent discussion about the news involving Gareth Barry and Swindon Town. Kieran mentioned that FA rules prevent active players from investing in any clubs. So is the case of Hector Bellerin and his stake in Forest Green different in some way? I believe he's now the second largest shareholder in the club, which would surely break the FA rules Kieran mentioned.
Yeah, I saw this article and read it as well. So I went on to Companies House and downloaded something which is known as the confirmation statement in relation to Forest Green Rovers.
Yeah.
And this listed out all 154 shareholders. Hector Bellerin is not on the list, which I find a bit strange. But in terms of are you allowed to buy shares, I think the rule is you're not allowed to have a significant minority stake or more. Now, that would be 10% or more of the shares of the club. And if we take a look at Forest Green Rovers, 96% of the shares are owned by the Green Britain Group, which I think is which you know related to the owner.
Yeah.
So even if he had bought shares, he would have been below the 10% threshold. There's lots of local people, and I think the Forest Green Rovers Supporters Club owns some shares as well. And I think that's really useful because it means that the annual general meeting fans and other investors are allowed to say, yeah, can we do this? Can we do that? We had Dale on the show, and he was, he's a pretty open guy.
Yeah.
That's where he stands. So I found it weird that he might own shares, but I can't find evidence of that on the company records.
Yeah. First of all, Kieran, when you say you went on to Company's House, that implies that you occasionally came off Company's House, which we know is not the case, Kieran. It's very in a way that some people have music on in the background. You have the Company's House website. It's an interesting one from Dan Giacomino because it was certainly reported a while back that Bellerin was taking a stake into Forest Green Rovers, but it might be just that he's publicly talked about the values that he shares with the club, those laudable values. He's a vegan and he's very much an environmental campaigner. So perhaps people in the press put two and two together. But that's a good question from Dan. And we got another very good question from Dan, a very interesting one. It's been a good week for Stockport County, a club I know that's close to your heart, Kieran. But Dan Jones says, at Stockport County's FA Cup replay this season, I noticed that much of the advertising space was taken up by Vita, you can tell me, Kieran, a company I believe to be controlled by Stockport's owner. With cases such as Newcastle, where profit is clearly not the main objective, I can see the logic of that strategy. But what would the aim of a smaller club such as Stockport doing this, as it appears to be bringing no extra external revenue into the club?
It's not bringing extra external revenue, but it is bringing revenue which would count towards financial fair play.
Ah.
We've just been talking about Forest Green Rovers, and Forest Green they are sponsored by Ecotricity?
Ecotricity, yeah.
We've got Stoke City being sponsored by Bet365, and we've got Manchester City being sponsored by the Etihad, there are many examples of what's referred to as related party transactions. Roman Abramovich used to have a seat at Chelsea for which he paid £1 million a year. This type of thing is common. Stockport have been acquired by a guy called Mark Stott, they have been approached. I'm absolutely delighted. I lived for a long time in Stockport. My kids went to school in Stockport. Last season they lost 50k a week, and that's the price of getting out of the National League. It is very high. Stockport County do owe one of Mark Stott's companies £2.6 million on the back of that. But if it's an interest free loan, which I suspect it is, it's just a way of funding the club. There could be some potential tax benefits to the company paying for the advertising. And as Stockport are a club that are losing money, they don't pay any tax anyway. So therefore, the club which is paying the tax, if they can claim that as a legitimate expense, and that potentially is the case, that would be down to their negotiations with HMRC, that would reduce their profits and therefore reduce their taxation. So for all accountants, as I've said on more than one occasion, our favourite three-letter word ending in X is tax, and that's how we roll.
Mm. You mentioned Bet365 there, Kieran, the very wealthy owners of Stoke City. I imagine they will be keeping an eye on our very first story, because I'm guessing that they will be thinking to themselves, if the authorities are going to let Everton away with flouting FFP regulations in such a obvious way, then we might as well start spending the money we have on getting Stoke back into the Premier League.
Well, they have just gone and bought the stadium.
Yes,
and they did that. The by pure coincidence, about a week before the rules changed, which then prevented you taking profits from stadium sales into the accounts for FFP purposes.
What a coincidence!
So, the world of football finance is full of such coincidences.
Well, as indeed are Charles Dickens books, but Charles Dickens lived his life on coincidence. He said, Charles Dickens said, "It's a small world; things are bound to happen." There you go. You learn a lot on this pod, don't you? Matty Hall has a question. And Matty Hall says, as you've discussed on the pod, many teams in Leagues 1 and 2 get two sets of home and away kits per season per team. If in the January transfer window a club buys a large number of new players, as they sometimes do when under new management, do they then pay extra to the kit supplier for extra kits, especially now players have names and numbers printed on the back?
It's what a brilliant question.
It's a great question, isn't it?
I contacted our very good friend Andy Holt about this, and he says, whilst we say it's broadly two sets of home shirts, two home and away, they're quite generous in terms of the size of the squad. So there tends to be a few blank shirts. And, of course, you can always go, you always pop into the club shop and say, we've just signed a left back on loan. Can you knock one up with, 42 and Jones on the back of it? In theory, if they have used all of their shirts, then they might have to apply for the club to the manufacturer. But I suspect they'll get a sympathetic response. We are hoping to get a shirt manufacturer that makes shirts for some quite well known clubs onto the show. Mm-hmm. We actually contacted them by them last week, and they said they're fans of the show. We might if we can get the date confirmed, we might have a ask the shirt manufacturer special edition in terms of the question show.
Do you know what, Kieran? We've had a couple of specials where it's ask the boss of Scottish football or ask an agent. I suspect we would get a lot more questions about shirts than we did about Scottish football or agents. It's also a very pleasing image of somebody signing for Accrington and going, where's the chairman gone? He's just pop round a club shop, get your shirt. Right.
When I was in Betis, I popped down to the club, because they got a club shot there, so therefore I'm going to be in there. I bought a shirt, and their shirts are made by Kappa. Uh-huh. And the trouble is with Kappa, they're designed for the Italian or the Latino physique. And even though I got double XL, I think it's fair to say it's somewhat bulging. So bear that in mind if ever you're buying a Kappa team.
I don't think they get many of your body type in the Real Betis club shop. No. Which I imagine stays open until about 11 o'clock at night, does it?
Yes.
Just to get those people who are coming out for lunch. Sweaty sack summer is approaching, and it's time for you to prioritise the comfort of your crotch. That's why the kings of crotch comfort, Manscaped, have spent 2 years designing the most comfortable boxer briefs out there, which are so breathable, they're like gills for your groin. We think it's time you invest in your family jewels. So let your bulge breathe and get 20% off and free shipping by using the code PRICEOFFOOTBALL at manscaped.com.
We already know that the Lawnmower 4.0 is the best electric trimmer for below-the-waist grooming. It gets rid of those Rhodes Boysons that you might have down there. But outside of ball trimming, Manscaped are now focusing their efforts on helping out your thigh slappers in other ways with their game-changing boxers. They feature the Jewel Pouch, which is designed to cradle your boys in their own special space, and it is lined with perforated performance fabric to keep them well ventilated. Basically, just imagine your balls sipping pina coladas, chilling on a hammock on some tropical beach.
So get 20% off and free shipping with the code PRICEOFFOOTBALL, all in big letters, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code PRICEOFFOOTBALL at manscaped.com. Once the boxers 2.0 touch your sack, you'll never go back. And unfortunately, Kieran, they are thigh slappers these days, but it's due to gravity.
I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Talking of Accrington, we've actually, producer guy found three more questions down the back of his gold sofa that we didn't get through at the live show, but they're good questions, and one of them in particular relates to something you've spoken about already. The first one comes from Chris Vose. And Chris says, how many times do clubs like Norwich, Fulham, Watford, West Brom, etc. need to get promoted and relegated before parachute payments are considered a reward for failure?
Yep, I absolutely understand where Chris is coming from. Parachute payments are part of the distribution of monies within the Premier League and the Championship. And frankly, the distribution model does not work. What we have is clubs are potentially getting too much money in the Championship, but not enough money when they get to the Premier League, and then they end up getting relegated. So should this be addressed? Well, we'll have to wait and see. But the reason why this is getting worse and worse is, I know I've said this before, it's all Leicester City's fault. By winning the Premier League in 2016, which was one thing, but and therefore, more importantly, taking away one of the Champions League spots for the following season from the greedy six, who think that those places are theirs and theirs alone. And let's be honest, over the course of the last 10 years, with the exception of Leicester, they have been theirs and theirs alone. So what happened is the greedy six went to the rest of the Premier League and they said, we want more of the TV money. So which means that it does make it more, if there's more money going to them, there's less money for the other 14, including those clubs which have just been promoted. So it's part of an overall issue that the big six clubs get too much money compared to the other 14, who in turn get too much money compared to the clubs in the Championship. In my view, it needs the whole thing needs addressing in an analytical and rational way. But until football sets its objectives, and every time I talk to people, they say, yes, I agree with you, distribution needs to be addressed. And you actually then drill down, what they mean is my club keeps the same or more money, but somebody else gets less. And I've yet to find anybody who has come up with a system which genuinely narrows the gaps both within and between divisions. If we reduce the gap between the Premier League and the Championship, you increase the gap between the Championship and League One. So we've also got yo-yo clubs in that position. You know, Rotherham, Barnsley, Wickham almost made it up. And so on. I think it needs addressing. Perhaps a neutral, unbiased, independent regulator would help.
Yes, commiserations to Wickham fans yesterday, but congratulations to Sunderland fans who are finally back in the Championship, which is good news financially for matchday income for the other clubs in the Championship, because they will be taking thousands to away games. We had a little knot, Kieran, of Blackpool fans at the show in Accrington. They will be delighted to hear that I'm wearing a rather fetching tangerine T-shirt just as we speak. Actually, it's orange, Kieran, because of my family background. I have to call it tangerine, otherwise I'll get angry tweets from cousins in Glasgow. But one of the Blackpool fans is Ant. And Ant's question is, I recently saw in Blackpool's accounts that we've lost around £41 million over the last 5 years. Is the club still paying off Valerie Bellicon, or is Oyston?
It is Oyston. Jailbird. Yes. I'll describe them as. I've been asked to yes. tone down
your description. Yes,
my normal description of him. So I'll just describe him as a former jailbird. So Blackpool have lost a lot of money, but the reason for that is that wages have been 121% of income over the last 5 years. Now, for part of that period, Blackpool fans were running their Not a Penny More yes. campaign, which meant that revenues from match day sales were reduced, and where they tried to put financial pressure onto the Oyston family to try to encourage them to sell the club. And that has now finally paid off. And then in 2021, when I think when the sale had gone through, they would have returned in numbers, but we had COVID. So I would expect that situation to substantially improve for 21-22 as the fans now are there. And also we are starting to see from Manchester United fans, they are also thinking, I was on a show last week and somebody said to me, well, what happens if 10,000 Manchester United season ticket holders all cancel their season ticket for next season? Will that have an impact? And under normal circumstances, it would have an impact. The downside is that the Glazers would be laughing their trolleys off if this did happen, because 10,000 fewer season ticket holders means 10,000 extra tourists who will pay A, more for the tickets, and B, the lines around the megastore. So I think Manchester United fans possibly need a slightly different strategy if they want to continue to want to put pressure onto the Oystons, onto the Glazers. And I'm a big fan of non-violent direct action by people to get messages across. It certainly eventually worked, in some of the other campaigns that we've seen. So with regards to the outstanding money which is due by Oyston to Bellicombe, that is a private matter, and that will not go through the accounts of the club.
Kieran, it's bad enough that you were saying Z for Z earlier. Now you're saying line instead of Q around the shop. This has got to stop. Can you just remind non-Blackpool fans briefly who Valerie Bellicombe is and why Oyston is paying him money?
Valerie Bellicombe was a minority shareholder in Blackpool Football Club. And when Blackpool were promoted to the Premier League, a fantastic achievement.
Yeah.
Under guy who was your manager, I've forgotten his name.
Holloway.
Yeah, Ian Holloway, who I've met, and he's a very funny guy.
Less so when I met him, but that's probably okay. Partially my fault. Yeah.
What happened was that I think Bellicombe was expecting a share of the proceeds, but Oyston made it very difficult, and I think the Oystons also took out £11 million in directors' pay in the season in which the club was in the Premier League, which legally they are entitled to do, but it resulted in a dispute from Mr. Bellicombe, of which he was subsequently proven to be successful, and therefore he was due compensation from Oyston, and that has been dragging on. And there's been various claims made by Oyston that the club was sold at too low a price and so on, but I don't think he's got very far with that.
Yeah, George Cahill was also at the live show at Accrington, and George has a question that relates to something you were talking about earlier. George says, couldn't UEFA make more money selling the corporate Champions League final tickets directly to real fans when so many of them are now on sale for thousands of pounds? Or are the corporate relationships more important than the actual income?
Fair comment, George. Well, if you take a look at UEFA's accounts, and there's no better way to spend a Sunday morning, I would wager, because that's what I have been doing. It may be a cloudless sky outside, but that doesn't stop me going through.
Kieran, can I point out that whatever the Baroness is doing at the moment is a better way of spending Sunday morning than going through the accounts of various.
Yeah, she's grouting the kitchen.
That's my point entirely. That's still a better way of spending Sunday morning than going through accounts.
So if we go into UEFA's accounts, it generated 992 million euro from sponsorship and corporate arrangements. And that involved, ultimately giving some of the tickets to the corporate sponsors. It only made 234 million euro from the sale of tickets themselves. In fact, what I was quite surprised to find out that only 4% of UEFA's income comes from ticket sales.
Oh.
Because they are very much focused on the sponsorship sector and the TV sector. The TV brings in 3/4 of UEFA's income. So if they had sold the corporate tickets for more, then the sponsors, I suspect, would have paid less for the rights, because one of the reasons why the sponsors like to pay is that they get the benefits of rocking up to the final. But I suspect they were given some bottles of water in the incredible heat of Sevilla.
Well, I imagine where they were, it was probably air-conditioned, Kieran, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Ben Foxcroft has a question, which again, by a coincidence, Kieran, it's amazing how it happens, as we said, is about something you've already mentioned. And Ben's question, a very interesting one, says, following on from discussions about ways of circumventing FFP rules, why can't owners pay players a small wage, but then compensate for this by making a private purchase from said player, which is overinflated, i.e. buy a random painting for £5 million, which then makes up for the small salary and doesn't count as a club-player interaction?
Yes, I think this is possible. The danger is that the player would have to show the profit on the transaction in their personal tax return, which should of course remain private. Things have a habit of leaking though.
Yeah.
And this is what we could. So if we take a look at what's happened in rugby with Saracens Rugby Club, what happened there is that in order to try to circumvent the equivalent of financial fair play in rugby, which was a wage cap, there was an arrangement between the club and a few of the players that they shared properties.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, the rental income and the capital gains on those ended up going to the players. And that was purely done to try to circumvent. And Saracens ended up being, getting some pretty stiff penalties as a result of that. So it's a risk if you are going to do that. I'm aware of some players who have, I don't know whether you ever watched the Sopranos, but Tony Soprano and his fellow friends from the Bada Bing, they used to have no-show jobs on construction sites. They would go in and they would collect a wage and they would just sit around, playing cards and drinking wine together. So I'm aware of some players at the lower levels of football, and this is below. Below EFL, but we're not very far below.
Yeah.
Who have a wage from their club, and then they also have a inverted commas job from another company owned by the club owner. This could be done. We had somebody. We could arrange this that very very similar to what Ben's just said. Why don't the players, instead of a painting or a drawing by the player, because the player might not be an artist, why doesn't the player endorse a range of NFTs? Which the club owner then buys at very, very high rates at an auction.
Yeah.
Could work.
Could work. That notion of having players in jobs as well as playing football was a fairly standard practice in the first part of the 20th century, wasn't it? They would be given jobs in inverted commas. Well, I went to see a Walter Sickert exhibition at the Tate Gallery on Wednesday. It's very good. Anybody who's in the London area, I would recommend it. So you're getting Dickens, Sickert, you're getting all sorts of stuff on this thing. Somebody who has visited the London area recently is Simon Todd. Simon Todd has a very good question, a somewhat flowery way of asking it, but I like that nevertheless. Simon says, myself and my roommate visited the big city this season to watch Fulham versus Barnsley. Unfortunately, the Super Reds did not come away victorious, but we had a great time nevertheless. While we were sampling the capital's finest ales, we were tickling each other's chins with thought-provoking questions. Very Alan Partridge way of putting things, isn't it? We were tickling each other's chins with thought. But we were stumped with the economics of an away day. More specifically, what are the financial implications or benefits for the away team? Does the away team get a slice of the away tickets, maybe a cut of the purchases made in the away stand? And how much would an away day cost a team in the Championship, for example, travel and accommodation?
Right. If an away fixture is not great for most clubs. First of all, under the way that the system works, is that if let's say that you're an away team and you're going to Club X and you're given it's the lower of 3,000 or 10% of the capacity of the ground. So if you could perhaps have 2,000 tickets, if you say we want 2,000 tickets and you only sell 1,500, then you've got to stump up for the other 500 yourself.
Yeah.
So that's a risk. You do get a commission. I don't think it's a very big commission, but you do get a commission for selling the away tickets. So you effectively just about cover your costs unless you fail to sell all the tickets you originally ordered. So that's not particularly lucrative. And then when it comes to the travel costs, I've spoken to a couple of people in the industry, and they would say, certainly at Premier League level, if you're not flying, you're probably talking 15 grand plus 10K for a hotel. Right. And the reason for that is that you're going to have one of the top range of coaches. If you are flying, and we've had this discussion about sustainability in football, and why are so many clubs choosing to fly because of convenience, speed, and so on. Realistically, to charter a flight, you are looking at £30,000 if you're going from. The distance isn't actually the issue. It's actually chartering the flight, because you've then got the pilot sitting on the runway whilst you're playing football, the pilot's still got to go and wait for the turnaround and so on. If you're going by coach, a team bus is normally £2,500. And if you're going anywhere, a long distance, you might be taking 2 days. You might be using that for 2 days. So the costs are quite high. And remember, during COVID, many clubs were using two or three coaches because of social distancing. So it is a very expensive activity. The higher up the food chain you go, the more expensive it becomes.
Yeah. Our final question, Kieran, comes from Tommy Bailey. Tommy says, during the game this season between Liverpool and Atletico Madrid, I enjoyed one of Anfield's exclusive Scouse pies. It reminded me of Kieran's love for Brighton's guest pies and got me wondering whether clubs have free rein on match day grub. In this modern world, are there any guidelines or restrictions in the top tiers regarding veggie, vegan or gluten-free options?
No, I think it is actually made, the decisions that tend to be made by the caterers. Yeah. There will be discussions between the club. It's in the interests of both the football club and the catering company to have a broad range of products which appeal to as many people as possible, because you want to maximise your sales revenue. I know that today, we were recording this on the Sunday, Brighton do have a guest vegan pie, a Balti vegan pie for the match at West Ham. As well as the regular chicken Balti, which is a thing of beauty.
Yes.
But the intricacies tend to be left to the caterers, because what the football clubs say, we're football clubs. We'll put this out to tender. We'll take the offer which we think is best in terms of range and price and revenue for the club, but doesn't tend to get involved in individual sort of granular decisions. But I think again, it'd be good to get a caterer onto the show to get the news on pies because it's a subject which is close to my heart.
It would be. That would be interesting, actually. Yeah, no, I'm guessing that Brighton is probably the only ground in the country that will sell out of vegan pies. It's the only, so I suggest if you're in Brighton and you fancy a free chicken balti pie, go along after the game. There'll be loads of them stacked up outside, whereas there'll be no vegan pies left at all. Thank you to everybody who has donated to the pod via our Patreon page. It's very kind of you. If you'd like to join them and make a small monthly contribution to our always free-to-air podcast, then go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I hope everybody enjoyed the last day of the Premier League yesterday. Well done to Burnley and or Leeds. Commiserations to Burnley and or Leeds. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, as always, folks, thanks very much for your support from all the different ways. I've sorted out the winner for the AHA tickets. and I'm absolutely delighted. I'm absolutely delighted that one of the people who wrote in respect of the competition, and the question was, in AHA's most famous song, "The Sun Always Shines On," blank, and they got the answer wrong, which for me, I think I'm going to send them a copy of my book purely because I love them so much. But to me, and for those of you that are wondering, well, what is the right answer? It's "The Sun Always Shines On TV."
I'm wondering what the wrong answer was, Kieran.
Yes. So thanks for all you Patreon supporters, and I hope the winner really enjoys the gig on Friday night. If you want to support the show in another way, get onto that podcast app of yours, and if you can give us a review, you can give us 5 stars. It helps us in the charts. Myself and Guy and Kevin, we don't really understand why, but Guy keeps reminding us that it helps the algorithms. And it doesn't matter what you say. You could say you'd rather have the show presented by Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins and Jeremy Corbyn. And I think that'd be quite an interesting meeting of minds, and I'd probably listen to the show myself. But apart from that, have a wonderful time. I'm going along with my autograph book on Tuesday night. I've been invited to the League Managers Association annual dinner, which I'm extremely excited about. I will see Kevin beforehand with a bit of luck.
Yes, I'm going to pop up and say hello and then press my nose wistfully against the window of the posh restaurant in which the League Manners Association do is going on. Billy Corgan, Smashing Pumpkins, that's arguably one of my favourite lines in the whole of comedy, certainly in The Simpsons, when Homer gets invited to see them and meets them backstage and is introduced. And Billy Corgan says, "Billy Corgan, Smashing Pumpkins," and replies, "Homer Simpson, smiling politely." Which is a lovely joke. Thank you, everybody. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.